Capital Investment Division will come to order Tuesday, April 9th. First item on the agenda is Mayor Carter. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. I want to thank you for including the 3rd Street Kellogg Bridge in your bonding bill and for giving me this opportunity to share with you our concerns about why funding for this bridge is necessary. Beginning in September of 2014, our bridge engineers recommended to my predecessor, former Mayor Chris Coleman, that the safety margins for the bridge dictated reducing its traffic capacity by 50% in order to contain all traffic weight directly over the pier structure rather than over the portions of the bridge supported by overhanging cantilevered sections of the structure. To meet safety requirements and structural code changes, the city reduced the 4-lane bridge to 3 lanes and also closed the pedestrian walkway on one side of it. This restricted state in which the 3rd Street Kellogg Bridge has operated for the past 5 years is safe for the current volumes of traffic on the bridge right now, but the situation is unsustainable in the long term. Bridge engineers, as you know, are some of the most cautious and risk-averse people that exist. Mistakes in their calculations can lead to very severe consequences, and so we always must err on the side of caution. To maintain and ensure the safety of the bridge, we inspect it every other month at a cost of about $40,000 per year, which is a stark contrast to the annual inspections we give every other bridge we own. Another concern for us is the weight of snowfall. The record-breaking snow that we experienced this February demanded a plan to remove snow from the bridge's restricted sections. Obviously, we cannot send staff onto those sections, so heavy snow removal would require partially closing the bridge to bring in equipment that can reach over the barricades from the side and safely remove the snow. The 3rd Street Bridge, as many of you know, is a key regional connector for businesses and residents, supporting approximately 14,000 vehicles daily, connecting residents on our east side and in our greater east metro area to the vitality of downtown and contributing to the livability of our metro area. Looking forward, the Gold Line Bus Rapid Transit is scheduled to start service in 2024 and scheduled to operate on the 3rd Street Bridge. We need the new bridge ready to go and operating to take full advantage of the Gold Line. This 3rd Street Kellogg Bridge is 37 years old and nearing the end of its useful life. It was originally owned and constructed by the state of Minnesota in 1982 before being conveyed to the city of St. Paul the following year with no funding or support for ongoing maintenance. While the vast majority of our city-owned bridges are 25 feet long and supported by 2 piers, the 3rd Street Kellogg Bridge is 2,100 feet long and supported by 19 piers. In fact, the only comparably sized city-owned bridge in the state is Minneapolis's 10th Avenue Bridge, which received rehabilitation funding from this body in 2017. We greatly appreciate your serious consideration of this urgent bonding request. Your support is critical to rebuilding the 3rd Street Kellogg Bridge and ensuring its ongoing safety and operation. I'm going to leave with you. I have letters here from our Gold Line partners who are in strong support of reconstruction of this bridge and also from a handful of leaders in our building and trades, building and construction trades councils. I'll leave those letters with you. We also have letters forthcoming from the chair of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. I think the reasons that you delineated are the reasons why most participants in the priority exercise had the Kellogg Bridge as number one or two.
Madam Chair, we greatly appreciate your recognition of the urgency of this request.
Plus the fact that Representative Zong's mom drives across the bridge every day.
Madam Chair, that's something that's very important to us as well.
Very good. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Lee.
Madam Chair, I move approval of the minutes from the April 4th meeting.
Representative Lee moves approval of the minutes as printed from April 4th. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted as printed. The next item on the agenda is the walkthrough of the Mr. Lee is going to walk through the capital budget proposal. Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and members, in your packets there should be a portraits-oriented letter-size spreadsheet that looks like this. It's 10 pages long. This is the list of appropriations in the DE amendment. I'll start on line 8, $117.7 million for asset preservation for the University of Minnesota, $28 million for the Child Development Building and the Twin Cities Campus, $4.3 million for Anderson Hall and UMD. Then for Minnesota State, $150 million for asset preservation. For the Department of Education, library construction grants, $10 million. For the Minnesota State Academies, $4 million for asset preservation, $5.3 million for the safety corridor, and $3.9 million for dorm renovations, $5 million for asset preservation for the Purbridge Center for the Arts. In the Department of Natural Resources, $71.5 million for asset preservation, $14 million for buildings, then a total of $14.85 million for flood hazard mitigation, with $10 million for the program, $1.3 million for the Boys to Sioux Watershed Red Path project, $2.3 million for the Cedar River Watershed District, and $1.25 million for Pearly and Hendrum. Then $200,000 out of the general fund for the Western Mine Pits. On line 45, $2 million for fire operations and airport infrastructure for the DNR, and $2 million for dam safety repair and removal. For Forests of the Future, $5.646 million, and then for the state trails, the Gateway Trail, $500,000. Going down to line 53, the City of Babbitt in Grants Political Subdivisions, $750,000. Northfield, $2.5 million. Then for the City of Rochester, $2.75 million. Then for the City of Richmond, Cold Spring, and Rockville for the Recorded Trail, then for Silver Bay, the Trailhead Center, $1.9 million, and $1 million for St. Louis County ATV Trail. For the Pollution Control Agency, $8.5 million for the Clay County Resource Recovery Campus. Then moving on to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, $10 million for local government roads wetland replacement program, $6.875 million for the City of Mankato water quality mitigation. Then under the Department of Agriculture, a total of $19.901 million for the laboratory building improvements, of which $500,000 is from the general fund. Moving on to the zoo, $4 million for asset preservation and $21 million for the Revitalize the Zoo project. For the Department of Administration, $10 million for statewide CAPRA, $500,000 for state office building Tunnel ADA compliance, $80,000 out of the general fund for the Capitol Campus Buildings Long-Term Plan, and $1 million for public TV equipment grants out of the general fund. Moving on to the Amateur Sports Commission, $2.5 million for the National Sports Center, $500,000 for National Sports Center asset preservation, $5 million for Mighty Ducks grants, and $350,000 for in a grant to the City of South St. Paul for the Doug Wu Arena. For the Department of Military Affairs, $10.507 million for the Rosemont Army Repair and Restoration, $2,195,000 for the Fergus Falls Army Repair and Restoration. For the Department of Public Safety, $6.5 million for the Maple Grove Range, $20 million for the Martin County Justice Center, and $2.5 million for the City of Minneapolis for the Emergency Training Center. Moving on to page 5 for the Department of Transportation, $100 million for the Local Road Program, $1.5 million for Anoka County East River Road, $728,000 for the City of Chanhassen Lyman Boulevard, $6 million for Douglas Drive in Golden Valley, $18 million for Maple Grove local road improvements around Trunk Highway 610, $794,000 for Oak Park Heights realignment, and $5 million for the City of Richfield for the 77th Street underpass, $15 million for Washington County for the interchange at Trunk Highway 36 and Kassaw 15, and then $100 million for the local bridge program. $48 million, in addition to that $100 million, is for the City of St. Paul, the 3rd Street Kellogg Bridge. $5 million is for the highway railroad grade crossing warning devices. $10 million for the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program. $10.7 million for the bike and pedestrian bridge in Minneapolis over 94. $14 million for port development assistance. $10 million for Safe Routes to School. $15 million for the passenger rail program, $25 million for passenger rail Northern Lights Express 3rd Main, $40 million for the facilities capital program, $52 million for the hazardous rail grade separation, specific to project in Moorhead, $10 million for Trunk Highway 49 railroad grade separation in Anoka, and moving on to grants to political subdivisions, $1 million for the City of Hastings for the bike and pedestrian improvements around Truck Highway 316, $1 million for the Coochaching Falls Coochaching County International Falls Airport, $2.5 million for the City of Northfield for a transit hub, $500,000 for the Ramsey County East Metro Rail Corridor, that's out of the general fund, $4,817,000 for the City of Red Wing for a grade separation project, $7 million for the Rochester International Airport, and $2.2 million for the City of Rochester's bike and pedestrian bridge. Moving on to the Metropolitan Council on page 6, $3.96 million for the Apple Valley Transit Station, $70 million for bus rapid transit lines, $10 million for inflow and infiltration grant, of which $2 million is a grant for the City of Newport, then $10 million for regional parks grants, $18 million for the Dakota County pedestrian and bike paths, $3.2 million for the City of Delwood for trails, $3 million for Minneapolis for the 26th Avenue North project, $3.1 million for Ramsey County for the Battle Creek Winter Recreation Project, $1.1 million for Ramsey County Lake Lynx Trail, $2 million for the Riverview Corridor for Ramsey County, $2 million for the Rushline Corridor for Ramsey County, $3 million for the City of St. Paul for the Great River Passage Center, $3.17 million for the West St. Paul lift stations, then $380,000 for the City of White Bear Lake Trails, $380,000 to the White Bear Township Trails. Department of Human Services, $18.288 million for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program Phase 2, $5 million for the Greater Minnesota Child Care Grant Program from the General Fund, and then $5 million from GO Bonds, $4.5 million for the City of St. Louis Park for the Perspectives Family Center, $300,000 for the Otter Tail County Facility Debt Payment, that's out of the General Fund, $1.365 million for St. Louis County Regional Behavioral Health Center, and then $250,000 for the Washburn Center for Children, and that is also out of the general fund. Then on the Department of Veterans Affairs, $10 million for asset preservation, $400,000 for the Martin County Veterans Memorial. For the Department of Corrections, $20 million for asset preservation, $7.5 million for the Lino Lakes building renovation, $2.7 million for the St. Cloud Perimeter Fence Project, $1.6 million for the St. Cloud Fire Suppression System, $2.6 million for the Togo Sewer System, $2.6 million for the Stillwater Fire Suppression System, $1.8 million for the Red Wing Master Control and ADA Compliance Project, and $2.85 million for the Arrowhead Regional Corrections Board, or NERC. Moving on to the Department of Economic Development, $3 million for the Business Development Improvement Infrastructure Program, $2 million for the Innovative Business Development Infrastructure, and then moving on to grants to political subdivisions for the City of Annandale, $4.753 million for infrastructure replacement, $8 million for the City of Becker for infrastructure and a business park, $3 million for Becker County for a museum, $9.7 million for Chadfield Center for the Arts, $5 million for the City of Champlin for the Mississippi Point Park, $750,000 for the City of Deep Haven for the North Home Avenue Bridge, $7 million for the Duluth Seawall and Surface Improvements, $250,000 for the Duluth Lakes or the Lake Superior Zoo, $5,488,000 for the Grand Rapids Ira Civic Center, $2 million for Hastings City Hall, $1.799 million for Hennepin County for Vivo Phase 1, $1.5 million for the City of Hibbing for Mine View Park, $1 million for the City of Lakeville for Ames Arena, then $50,000 for the City of Lakeville for the Ritter Farm Park, $180,000 for Lake City of Lakeville for clean water infrastructure, $250,000 for the City of Lakeville for sanitary sewer lift stations, then $19 million for the City of Minneapolis for the Central City Storm Tunnel, $2 million for the City of Minneapolis for an outdoor performance venue, $550,000 for the City of Minneapolis for the Schubert project, and I'll also note that there's a cancellation that corresponds with the previous appropriation that we'll get to at the end of the spreadsheet. Then $300,000 for the City of New Ulm for the German Park Amphitheater, $12.5 million for Olmsted County for the Grand Park Event Center, and $845,000 for the Rice Lake Water and Sewer Utilities, $100,000 for the Serbian Cultural Center in Minnesota out of the General Fund, $10.7 million for the City of St. Cloud Municipal Athletic Complex, $2.5 million for the Jacob Wetterling Rec Center and St. Joseph, and $4 million for the St. Louis County Heritage and Arts Center. Then $500,000 for the East Side Freedom Library for the City of St. Paul, $250,000 for the Downtown YMCA out of the General Fund for the City of St. Paul, then $750,000 for the Humanities Center for the City of St. Paul, $5.5 million for the International Institute of Minnesota for the City of St. Paul, $4 million for the Playwright Center in the City of St. Paul, $3 million for the Victoria Theater in St. Paul, $5 million for the Creek Center in the City of Plymouth, and $5 million for the John Rose Oval in Roseville. Then $178,000 for sewer and street improvements in the City of Willerney. Moving on to the Public Facilities Authority on page 9, $5 million for matching grants for US EPA capitalization, then a total of $40 million for the Wastewater Infrastructure Fund, of which $15 million is for the clean water drinking infrastructure and $25 million is for drinking water infrastructure, then $22 million for the point source implementation grants. Under grants to political subdivisions, $2 million for the City of Bemidji for drinking water, $1.22 million for Duluth North Source Sanitary District debt service reduction, $6 million for the East Range Joint Powers Board drinking water system, $600,000 for the City of Floodwood for stabilization ponds, and then another $600,000 for the same project out of the general fund. Then $600,000 for the City of Orinoco for wastewater infrastructure, then $5.75 million for the Red Rock Rural Water System for water treatment plant and line expansion, $4.4 million for the City of South St. Paul for the Concord Street Public Utilities, $5 million for the City of Spring Lake Park water infrastructure, and $17 million for the water treatment plant in Two Harbors. Then $9 million for Twin Lakes Township water infrastructure and $5.28 million for the Western Lakes Superior Sanitary District. Then under Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, $30 million for public housing rehabilitation for the GEO bonds. And then for Minnesota Historical Society, $12 million for the Fort Stilling Visitor Center, $4 million for historic sites asset preservation, and $750,000 for the county and local historic preservation grants, and then $300,000 for the City of South St. Paul for a women's suffrage memorial. Moving on to Minnesota Management budget for bond sale expenses, $1,541,000 for GEO bond sale expenses and $102,000 for trunk highway bond sale expenses. Then $120 million in new authorization for appropriation bonds for nonprofit housing. Then you will see the totals on lines 320 through 326. And a few calculations that have to be made with the totals on 327 to 331. The net GO number the gross GO number is on 327 at $1.500550 billion. Then there's the GO cancellation mentioned earlier for the Schubert Theater at $550,000, bringing the bill to a total of $1.5 billion in net new GO bond authorization, with a target of $1.5 billion in GO authorization and $10 million in general fund spending. Moving on to the debt service tracking sheet. That's the legal size sheet that's in a landscape. One page. So the lines here that are bolded and italicized are changes, and the lines that are not are the base debt service appropriations or base budget. So you can see the first change is on line 4 with the additional MHFA bond authorization, with debt service starting in fiscal year 2023 at $4.8 million. And then on line 11, this is the, you can see at the far right-hand side, this is the DE amendment in front of you, $10 million for general fund spending. And then you can see the additional debt service authorization as a result of $1.5 billion in additional GO borrowing at on line 16. And then you can see the House target in the box below the other calculations at $1.613,479,000 in debt service and cash capital spending. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm done, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Ms. Dyson, would you please walk through Article 2 of the proposed DE-1?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Article 2 in the DE-1 begins on page 63, and the first section is the negotiated sales authority. This gives the Minnesota Management and Budget the authority to use a negotiated sales approach as opposed to the competitive approach for issuing bonds, and it's authority that they've had since approximately 2008 or 2009, but the existing authorization for this expired, and so this is renewing it and making it permanent. Section 2 is the is a new program in the Department of Employment and Economic Development for the Greater Minnesota Child Care Facility Capital Grant Program, which is funded in Article 1 with $5 million in GO and $5 million in general fund. And the programmatic approach creates two accounts, one in the Special Revenue Fund and one in the Bond Proceeds Fund. The eligible applicants include city, county, school district, or joint powers board of those entities for the for accessing either account. Private child care providers would only be eligible for general fund appropriations. The program is to provide up to 50% of the capital costs for child care facilities in Greater Minnesota, and as you will see on page 64, the purpose of this is to enhance or keep jobs in Greater Minnesota and increase the tax base and expand or create new economic development in the areas. Then going on to page 66, section 3 of Article 2 is the Library Construction Grant Program statute, and in subdivision 5, this relates to the accessibility grants and increases the grant amount from $200,000 to $450,000. Section 4 on page 66 is the Transportation Facilities Capital Program. This is the program for trunk highway bond spending that in the bill on page 27 has $40 million in trunk highway bonds authorized, and this comes from the governor's bill. On page 67, section 5, this is the Mighty Ducks program and continues on through page 69, where you'll see the change in the grant amounts. And there were a number of bills introduced to increase the grant amounts for the rehabilitation or renovation related to air quality improvements and reduction or elimination of the R22. And I believe this section is also in the state government finance bill at this point, the statutory change. Section 6, 7, and 8. These are from the governor's bill, and these are the equity provisions that modify the Minnesota Human Rights Act to include local governments that receive state bond funding and capital funding in requirements related to affirmative action plans and pay equity certifications. On page 71, section 9, and then section 10, you have the housing infrastructure bonds The new authority for $120 million in housing infrastructure bonds, and Section 10 that continues on to page 72 establishes the payment from the general fund. Section 11 is an extension of time for the Richfield 77th Street underpass to 2023 to match the time period that would apply for the new funding that's in Article 1 for this project. And then Section 12 is the Veterans Home Trust Bridge in Minneapolis. This allows that any money that is not spent specifically on the bridge can go to asset preservation of veterans home statewide. Section 13 on page 74 relates to the Glen Sheen project that was funded in 2018 and allows a staging of the projects based on the non-state contributions that are made to the project so that they can, once they have enough match for a particular discrete aspect of the Glen Sheen project, they can access the state money and proceed with that part. Section 14 and 15 are from the governor's bill and make corrections to total amounts in the 2018 bonding bill that were in error. And then Section 16 is the effective date for the article, which is the day after enactment, the same as Article 1. And that concludes Article 2.
Are there any questions on Article 2? Any questions from Ms. Dyson? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Dyson. As Mr. Lee pointed out, there's the $550,000 of the Schubert Theater. Does that appear in Article 1? Because it seems like it might be more appropriate for it to be in Article 2.
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, it's all in Article 1. There's the new appropriation, and then there is the cancellation. So it has a net zero impact, but for accounting reasons, it's best to put it into Article 1 as a new appropriation and then an offset of the cancellation.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Dyson. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Dyson. Before you, then, is 2529DE1 as a proposed amendment, as a proposal for you, and with the corresponding capital budget figures, as Mr. Lee outlined. These are two documents are not perfect. There can be corrections. There can be additions or deletions, as long as we meet our target of $1.5 billion. The announcement on the previous meeting was that we were going to have the walkthrough this morning, and we were going to take testimony from the public, and we can also have conversations. But I would like to look through the other items in our packet. And one is to accompany the information that you already have for DE and for the budget. One of the items in your packet is this map. From Department of Transportation, with all the road projects. Right. And on the other reverse side is the projects that are mentioned in in the DE. By where they're, by their location. The other item in your agenda, or in your packet, is the local bridge replacement program. And that is with the locations and a summary of the priorities for that DOT is sharing with us and the priority list throughout the state as it affects this bill. And then the next item is the Minnesota State HEPR list and projects and where they are located throughout the state. This is truly a statewide regional county city township Minnesota proposal. A proposal for Minnesota. A proposal to connect Minnesotans and fix the problems throughout the state that are ongoing and address on a priority basis needed projects, emergencies, and a few wants. There's no area of the state where people live that will be totally unaffected by the projects and the contents of the DE1. Some people will be affected a lot more than others. There are a lot of problems in some areas more than others. I think they've been addressed as well as we could do in the first imperfect run through. There's also the University of Minnesota's HEPR list in our packets. Lines that are contained in the projects of their needs. Individuals, Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Mr. Lee. He went through the general fund debt service spreadsheet, and I just want to make sure I'm looking at the correct numbers. Could you clarify for me, please, at $1.5 billion in borrowing, what is the annual debt service just on that?
Madam Chair and Representative Juergens, on line 16 is the additional above base debt service that's required to service $1.5 billion in GO bonding. This is not specifically to $1.5 billion. There's a little bit of a variance because there is an assumed amount built into the base that the bold italicized numbers on line 16 represent an increase above base. So the $1.5 billion would be probably a little over, if you look on line 16 for the biennial total of 2020-2021, $131 million, it would probably be slightly higher than that, but because there's already some level of borrowing assumed in the base, that nets out a little bit. So, I would think that the neighborhood of 133 plus a couple million above base for the first biennium, and then for the second biennium, 225 million above base, is that $150 million number. Again, since MMB already assumes in their bases that a $265 million bonding bill would be passed or enacted this year, and then $775 million next year, there's the debt service increase is not in isolation to one bill, but as part of a bunch of different bills, if that answers your question.
Madam Chair, Mr. Lees. So adding this to the total debt service, that would be line 18, and the new total then would be line 20, so ballpark $1.6 billion for 2021 and almost $1.8 billion in debt service for 22-23.
Madam Chair, Representative Juergens, that's correct. Line 18 shows the total GO debt, so the base GO debt is on line 15. The additional in this proposed DE amendment is on line 16. Then the total GO is on line 18. And then line 20 shows GO plus appropriation bonds. So the appropriation bonds total and cash spending is on line 13. And so with the GO and the appropriation bonds, that's $1.13 billion for this biennium and $1.782 billion for the next biennium.
One clarification. So that includes the appropriation bonds as well. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Dean.
thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to ask, just because I'm now seeing the HEPA request, the fine list for the University of Minnesota, and I see two large items, one for $15 million and one for $13.3 million called capital renewal. Is there anyone that can really explain what that means? Because I thought HEPA was for maintenance, repair, and things like that.
Someone from the university.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
J.D. Burton with Government Relations at the University of Minnesota. Representative, can you please repeat the two projects you referred to?
Yes, Mr. Burton. I'm looking at the HEPA list on the page 2 portion. It would be number 59 and number 67. 59 is the Food and Science and Nutrition building, and it's capital renewal. And then on line 67, it's mechanical engineering. It's capital renewal phase 3.
Sure.
Mr. Burton.
Madam Chair, Representative, the categories of the project description are varied based off of the type of work that's actually going to be done. On a larger project like the two you're identified here, there's a whole host of different things that are going to be occurring there, whether it's mechanical, whether it's roofing, whether it's other capacities. So we define capital renewal as sort of a broader description of a larger number of things that are going on that are eligible for HEPA funds.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is more to the committee, maybe to staff. Didn't we just fund the renovation of the mechanical engineering building like within the last 5 or 6 years? That was pretty significant. And if I'm thinking of a different building, I apologize.
Mr. Burton.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm going to have to go back to our files to determine exactly how we characterize mechanical engineering. There was a mechanical engineering project from several years ago that was HEPA, but it was a beginning phase. A lot of these projects are multi-year phase projects because they're so large. But this afternoon or this evening, we'll have our facilities folks here, and we'll follow up with you on that specific question.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Burton. Okay.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is the representative from Minnesota State System here? I'm looking, and I don't see him.
I think
Brian.
Maybe they're coming at 5.
I'll hold my question till then.
Thank you very much. Ms. Connor, going back to Representative Juergens' question, could you come and remind us about our debt capacity?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Liz Connor from Minnesota Management and Budget. According to the February forecast, the current debt capacity of the state is just over $3 billion, which is the maximum amount of borrowing that the state could undertake in the next biennium before we exceed the measures of our debt limit.
Would you repeat that again, please?
Sure. The debt capacity limit of the state, according to the February 2019 forecast, is just over $3 billion, which essentially means that that is the most that the state could borrow in the next biennium before we exceed the limits in our debt capacity limits.
$3 billion.
Just over $3 billion. I believe it's 3.1.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you to that point, Madam Chair. It's really a guideline, not a limit, I believe. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, that's correct.
And how close have we ever gotten to our guidelines in the past?
Ms. Connor.
Madam Chair, Representative, I would have to go back and look to see how close we've been in the past.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Have we ever exceeded our guideline limits, or guidelines, I should say?
Ms. Connor.
Madam Chair, Representative, not that I am aware of, but again, I would go back and check to see.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'd appreciate that if we could see just how close we've come. Madam Chair, I had a couple of other questions not related to this.
Okay, I think I have a couple more related to Ms. Connor. Representative Constein?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Currently, the economic climate, we're at historic lows for borrowing, is that correct? Interest rates?
Ms. Connor.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not sure that we are at historic lows, but I think it is safe to say that we are in a favorable borrowing climate, coupled with the fact that the state's credit rating leverages a favorable interest rate as well when we borrow.
Quick follow-up.
And
if that would change by a quarter of a, what the point system, what do they call it? You know, how much difference are we talking about, ballpark?
Ms. Connor.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm a bit out of my depth venturing a guess to that question, but perhaps there is a measure going up in those steps that you're referring to. I can look into that and get back to the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Connor. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, in a general sense, obviously there are a lot of good things that you've put on this bill. I think the key for us is a lot. Yes, we may have the capacity for $3 billion. But at 1.5 this year, I sense that that's also where we're going next year, being right at the very limit of what we can do in light of the other things, tax increases and expenses that the state is having. It puts us, I think, in a possibly precarious situation as far as our voters are concerned, because obviously they have to pay for all of this. I do have a specific question, however, and that's on the PFA, and that is one of the areas that I am very interested in, of course, funding. But I'm wondering, and maybe Mr. Freeman can answer this. I think it's $122 million for PFA. Those items that are listed here, if we did $122 million PFA, would that be covered by what is already being set aside for this by the PFA?
Mr. Freeman.
In other words, Madam Chair, the question is, do they need to be earmarked, or are they already covered by the money that we would be appropriating?
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, each of these would be
a little different story. Some of these projects would be eligible for PFA programs, but perhaps only the low-interest loan side, not necessarily grant. Some are on the list and in line for funding through a combination of loans and grants. Others may not be eligible, so it varies.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Representative Salt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before you jump up, there's always this business, the vagary of us forcing our will, the collective us, onto the work that has been methodically planned and run through the systems that we also approve of by a department. And I'm curious how much space is there, or how much laxity is available, that we're not just completely turning your planning system upside down when we try to, let's say, correct for priorities.
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Luck.
Correct. I've got to write that one down. Correct for priorities.
I'm not sure how to answer that. The
money, with as much clarity and forthrightness as possible.
The money for the PFA programs that are in the state matching funds for the relevant loan programs, the WIF grants, the PSIG grants, there are a lot of projects, and I've shown you the lists of those projects that have been going through the process. Many are lined up for construction this summer, and this money would allow many of those to move ahead. So there's a lot of cities, a lot of projects that work through the process. I don't want to necessarily say anything negative about the others. There are the programs work well, but I can't say they fit every situation, and I guess that's up to your discretion to decide which ones those are.
Representative,
so I'll take another, just a short version of that question. And we've got examples that I think in all of our districts where we've had a project that we knew had worked its way through the system and was continuing to buffet itself against some sort of impediments to the decision process. And then other projects sort of hit a streamline patch with a person who has a voice that would push it forward. I've campaigned to people relative to bureaucrats' work, particularly in the area. I find it useful to use transportation, and I'll say, you know, we pay these engineers huge salaries, and they spend an inordinate amount of time planning these projects, and then we, as the ultimate body, come in and say, no, we'll put this one in front of that, causing the engineers to have to pick that project up, set it aside, and possibly to be left there wasting that, both hours and dollars expended on their expertise, and never come to any bail. And I find that one of our hidden wastefulnesses in our process. So I'm trying to fish for something. I understand your reticence. I'm fishing for something that would cause us to have a very open and real discipline about entering into the process.
Manager, Representative, look, what I can say is that the projects that are on the priority list and that go through the process, it can be a lengthy process, and it's lengthy because there's a lot of engineering work that has to happen, environmental review, city capital improvement planning that all has to line up. For cities to invest the time and the energy and go through that effort, a big part of it is confidence that there will be some predictable funding available for them when they have their project ready for construction. And that's something that we take very seriously and work hard to try to
show cities that there is that predictability and to guide them through that process. It can be disruptive to all of that when there are other projects that may bypass that process. And I think the best way in the long term to meet the long-term infrastructure needs is to have a consistent and predictable process that cities can plan on.
Thank you.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this isn't related to PFA. So,
Representative Pearson's relating to this.
Okay, I'll go after Representative Pearson.
Thank you. So it would be maybe informative for us if we knew of the kind of the earmarked projects that are on here, what we would anticipate would get funded if we did use the competitive process that is determined. Is there a way you could get us a list that would inform us of that?
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Pearson, yes, I can provide that information.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just going through, you know, these numbers, and a few things sort of stand out. You know, when I look at Department of Transportation, we do $100 million to local road programs, but then there's an additional $47 million that go to local roads as well, as grants to local subdivisions. And when I team that or combine that with the local bridge program, which includes the bridge in St. Paul, and then add Heber on top of that, in just those four areas, we're at almost 40% of what we put in this bill. If folks are thinking that, you know, I mean, there may be a lot of projects, as Representative Erdahl say, but there's like four areas that eat up almost, you know, 40% of this particular proposal. But that's not my big question. My big question is, I look at the within deed the grants to political subdivisions, and I know that the governor didn't fund any of those. And we almost fund all of those, but we've left two out. And I'm curious why the City of Virginia Regional Public Safety Center, as well as the Fergus Falls Riverfront Corridor, didn't quite make it in, because we've got quite a bit of other things. And I there's a part of me that's saying, if we're going to put them all in, then let's put them all in. But maybe, you know, someone here might be able to talk about why these two specific projects didn't, to use a bad term, cut the mustard. Just curious, if we know.
The none of the fire departments or police center training centers got in, because there is no program at this particular time or no process for them to apply for what qualifies as the regional center. And in the past, I remember back to the 90s, the regional center, there was a understanding of what would be a regional center, and there would be like eight across the state, if my memory serves me, and it might be wrong. But, and those were, then we had the regional center. Now it seemed like the projects that came to us did not go through the last run through of MMB's process, nor did they, or they announced to themselves that they would be a regional center, but nor we don't have recognition of that those projects as regional centers at this time. And so in our process as we were going along, I thought that we should try to develop some language and maybe working with Department of Public Safety determine what in the future will be regional training centers, and that would be better if they went through the MMB process this year, coming in May and ending in July, and then get on the list for next year.
Okay.
That was my thoughts when I made that determination. It also might have been part of the discussion a little bit the other night when we were compiling the results of the survey. And that might have had a part to that. There was one more point I was going to make, but I can't remember it now to answer your question.
Well, Madam Chair, and I think of Representative Narnes's project, I believe the Fergus Falls Riverfront Corridor, which I think was around $1.5-1.6 million. And you hit the mark exactly, $1.5 billion. I understand that, but I'm just sort of curious why that also may not have made it through the blender to show up on our spreadsheet.
As I said, this is not a perfect document.
Again, Madam Chair, just
and
a couple observations.
Through, and then amendments to this bill are, or to this proposal, are due by tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And it could very well be that there could be an author's amendment. Representative Narnes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been quietly sitting here somewhat in shock because of the size of the bill. I think we were told it was around $800 million to start with, but that's not what I wanted to mention. Sitting here, it's hard for me to pass an amendment to make it larger, but there are at least two or three projects that aren't in here that are mine, and we need to discuss that at some point as we go forward. And one of them is that riverfront project, which I think is very important to my area, and it's not a real pricey project. So we'll talk further.
Yes, we can do that. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a general comment and a specific question. I think we had the conversation about training centers and regional centers versus where they should be earlier. And quite a few years ago, they were trying to focus on maybe a couple spots in the state. I know that Fort Ridgely was going to be the site. And they've loosened up considerably. I think it goes beyond regional centers now, as to where some of these training sites and police training centers and fire training centers are going to be located, but that's something that we need to nail down more in the future. I'm just wondering, when I chaired, we would have, like, I think in 2018 we had $4 billion in requests for a billion-dollar bonding bill. And I'm wondering, in this particular bonding bill, do we know how much in requests we had relative to what is being suggested for appropriation?
Yes, we do.
And what would that be, Madam Chair?
I don't have it here with me today. I will bring it this evening.
Right, thank you.
This meeting is in recess until 5 o'clock this afternoon. The recess meeting of the Capital Investment Committee will come to order. Mr. Letterly, will you come to the table first, please? Mr. Letterly is from DOT, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the relationship of the railroad projects and their connections and whatever else he wants that the various people that have been giving him directions. We welcome you to come, and we thank you for coming to clarify these various railroad projects for us. Mr. Letterly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I was asked to come here today and explain a little bit more about the Third Main proposal. And the Third Main project is the design, engineering, and construction of a third mainline railroad track and the related improvements between adjacent to two existing BNSF railway mainline tracks between Northtown Yard and a place called Coon Creek Junction in Coon Rapids, which is a distance of approximately 6 miles. The entire project is 6 miles. Phase one of this project includes the section between the north end of BNSF's Northtown Yard and the Fridley North Star Commuter Rail Station, which is a distance of approximately 2 miles. This section of track is one of the busiest in the country. It is a key part of the route that connects Chicago to the west coast ports of Seattle and Portland. It also connects to the oil fields of North Dakota. And MnDOT estimates that there are approximately 60 to 90 trains per day on this section of track, which is one train every 8 to 12 minutes, day and night. And that includes two daily long-distance Amtrak trains and 12 weekday North Star commuter trains. We've done some detailed train operation modeling for this section of track, as well as the entire Northern Lights Express route. And what we find is that a third main in this section would have a significantly positive impact on railroad operations in this area. It would allow freight trains, to including the oil trains, to move through the Twin Cities more efficiently and with fewer delays. It would allow a significant increase in the operating efficiency for North Star. The third main would add a second platform track to the Fridley Station, and the presence of that second track would improve the way that North Star could operate in such a way that they could actually, I am told, reduce their schedule so that they would operate faster. It would ensure that that existing passenger trains like Amtrak's Empire Builder could operate through this busy section reliably and on time without negatively affecting freight operations. And that phrase is important because BNSF's policy is that they are willing to operate passenger trains as long as if there's no impact on their freight train operation. So when we do our modeling, when we do our capacity analysis, that's the thing that we're looking for. And finally, this improvement would provide additional capacity that we can use to increase passenger train operations, including expanding North Star service and, of course, implementing the proposed Northern Lights Express between Duluth and Twin Cities. Now, the funding that's being proposed today, MnDOT would work with BNSF to apply for federal matching grants under what's known as the BUILD grant program, which is the successor to TIGER, and the Consolidated Rail Infrastructure and Safety Improvement Grant Program, sometimes called CRISI, as well as other federal grant programs that the project may be eligible for.
Thank you so much, and thank you for being on call throughout the weekend and answering our little questions that we had.
Sure.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tonight we're going to have testimony of the people that wanted to come before us on the DE amendment. And the first person on the agenda is Andrew Johnson. Mr. Johnson is a city councilor in Minneapolis, and he's interested in trains, too.
I sure am, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Madam Chair, thank you, committee members. We greatly appreciate all the work you've put into this bill. It makes critical investments in important vital infrastructure from across the state of Minnesota. We are particularly glad to see our transportation investments that are important not only to the region but to all of Minnesota included in this bill, including the D-Line which represents a critical bus rapid transit route through multiple cities, including Minneapolis, and as well Northern Lights Express, which is a project that really benefits all of Minnesota and lives up to the idea and the concept of One Minnesota. We're glad to see the affordable housing dollars in this, including the Child Care Capital Grant program, which is around workforce development. These are addressing critical needs within our communities across Minnesota, and as well appreciate the investment in local projects of importance, including Upper Harbor Terminal, which is a critical issue in helping address racial disparities within our community. So we appreciate all the great work that the committee's been doing. Want to encourage you as well to keep moving forward with this for a bill that really benefits all of Minnesota. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good timing. Mayor Shep Harris. Mayor Harris, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Shep Harris. I'm mayor of Golden Valley, which is a beautiful and wonderful, successful suburb of 22,000 residents just west of Councilmember Johnson City. And I want to say that you will see that there's a handout, a letter of support from the city of Golden Valley for the DE1 amendment. And I just definitely want to underscore a sense of urgency in our community for the projects that are included in the DE1 amendment, especially when it comes to public health and safety for our community. Specifically, you'll see in there is funding for a Highway 55, a state Highway 55 pedestrian underpass. And I welcome any of you to come out to my community anytime, and you will see this is a very busy intersection, which just to the south of it is the Perpich Center for Arts Education, a state-run institution where we on a daily basis are putting our children, our state's children, in harm's way. They have to cross 7 dangerous lanes, and these are able-bodied students and commuters who have to cross over 7 dangerous lanes of traffic on a daily basis. So this pedestrian underpass would greatly improve their safety. And I also want to express a sense of urgency for the flood mitigation funding that is also in this amendment. We have a number of residents, not only in Golden Valley, but just to the north of us in the cities of New Hope and Crystal, where climate change has created an expedited, like I said, a sense of urgency where we are having some severe flood challenges. We've already received some funding for flood mitigation, but there is a need to continue this. So we do appreciate the fact that it is in the bill. And finally, I want to put in a plug for the inflow and infiltration dollars that are in this amendment as well. Golden Valley isn't specifically cited in that section, but I can tell you we are one of the primary cities that receive these dollars as infrastructure, especially when it comes to public health. We want to make sure, especially our sewer lines, are in good shape, and this funding has helped us as we have continued to invest millions of dollars over the past 12 years in ensuring the safety of our sewer lines for our public. So, Madam Chair, a sense of urgency, and really do encourage you and the rest of the committee to keep these projects in this bill going forward into conference committee and hopefully to the governor's office. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next on the agenda is Superintendent Ben Gora. And then he's followed by Commissioner Schnell, Ho, and MFD, Ms. Raton.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, for this opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Al Bangora. I'm the superintendent of the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. Bonding is a critical funding source for the Metropolitan Regional Park System, which includes all the metropolitan area counties and the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Bloomington. Collectively, we serve almost over 60 million user visits each year, and our system is admired throughout the country. We all know that the Metro Regional Park agencies could not succeed without the help of the state legislature. One of the projects I want to briefly talk about is the 26th Avenue Overlook. It is located in the east end of the recently completed 26th Avenue North Greenway, which connects the Grand Rounds at Theater Worth Regional Park with Mississippi River through the heart of North Minneapolis. The 26th Avenue North Overlook will create a welcoming public space along the river that is now an unsightly and accessible dead-end street where dense vegetation and chain link fence block the river. This year, we will begin a site cleanup and restoration of the river vegetation using current philanthropic funding. Bonding funds will allow the park board to expand the public amenities around the overlook based on community input we have received. This project is in the Above the Falls Regional Park in North and Northeast Minneapolis on the Mississippi River. This part of Minneapolis has been ignored for far too long. The park board has specifically targeted these neighborhoods for public investment. Another one is the Above the Falls Regional Park in North Minneapolis is the Upper Harbor Terminal. The Upper Harbor Terminal is a top priority for both the city and the park board. The entire site is 48 acres. The city is devoting 40% of the site, which is 19.5 acres, to the parkland to the river, and this is really a game changer. We are grateful to the city for giving the park board the land, which allows us to focus on public amenities and bring the public to the river. The proposed park will include shoreline restoration, parkway and trails, and areas of larger park space and a 1 mile of riverfront. There is a lot of support and excitement around the public parks in the upper river, and we have and will continue a robust public engagement process to deliver a world-class park. As the superintendent of the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, I want to thank you for including Metropolitan Regional Park request in the bonding bill and ask for your support for passing this bill. The request includes high-priority projects located in 17 regional parks managed by 10 implementing Metropolitan Regional Park agencies. These projects have been approved by local units of government and are shovel-ready. The projects are diverse and will benefit everyone. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Commissioners? Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Britta Raton, Assistant Commissioner and Budget Director at Minnesota Management and Budget. Thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight. Commissioner Franz regrets that he's unable to be here, but I am testifying on his behalf, and he wants to thank the committee for the alignment of the priorities in this bill with the governor's priorities, including in the areas of asset preservation, higher education, housing, transportation infrastructure, water infrastructure, and the safety and security of our correctional institutions. I want to take just a moment to explain both the urgency and the opportunities in front of us with this bill. There are many reasons that passing a bonding bill this year is so important because these projects just can't wait. First is deferred maintenance. Between the state enterprise, Minnesota State, and the University of Minnesota, we're currently maintaining and preserving roughly 85 million square feet of public assets with deferred maintenance costs of $7.1 billion. Second is local water infrastructure. Minnesota communities have identified $5 billion worth of projects that need to be completed over the next 20 years to replace and rehabilitate wastewater and sewer systems. Third is housing. According to Minnesota Housing, between the year 2000 and 2017, median rent in Minnesota has increased 13%, while median income of Minnesota renters has declined by 1%. The result of this is that affordable and safe housing is slipping out of the reach of too many Minnesotans. Fourth is local transportation infrastructure. Communities are struggling to stay connected to critical services because of local roads and bridges that aren't safe or aren't built to meet the current capacity. When roads are in poor conditions, it costs Minnesotans time, money, and peace of mind. And finally, we are all aware of the dangers facing Minnesota's correctional officers. Correctional facilities play a key role in ensuring staff and workplaces are safe. The Department of Corrections must be able to address the deferred maintenance needs that put safety and operations at risk. Although all these needs are significant, Minnesota is in a position of opportunity to address these challenges. Interest rates are currently low, and Minnesota has a AAA bond rating. Additionally, a significant portion of the funding in this bill and in the governor's proposal is directed towards preserving, maintaining, and renewing the assets that we already have. And taking care of what we have is fiscally responsible. I also want to acknowledge and thank you for the alignment of the policy and technical proposals in this bill with the governor's proposals, including the authority for negotiated bond sales, incorporating equity requirements into all capital projects, and the needed technical corrections to last year's bill. Again, on behalf of Commissioner Franz, thank you for your work on this bill, and I will pass it over to Commissioner Ho.
Commissioner Ho.
Hi, Madam Chair. I am Jennifer Ho, the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this evening. In my first few months on the job, I've had the opportunity to talk with people all across the state. Regardless of where I go and with whom I speak, one thing has become clear. We need more housing. We need more housing available at all income levels, for all types of households, everywhere in Minnesota. In fact, we need over 50,000 additional homes just to address the current shortage, particularly for households who earn less. In the next decade, we need over 300,000 new homes just to keep pace with our growth. The private market and existing tools take care of some of that, but what is required is a 50% increase in production over the status quo. The private market cannot and will not do this without state investment. Your inclusion of $150 million in bonds for housing, matching the largest ever recommended by a governor, is recognizing the magnitude of the challenge we face as a state. I am very, very grateful. Just as roads and bridges and buildings on colleges and university campuses are critical to our quality of life and our competitive advantage, so too is an adequate supply of safe homes that are affordable to Minnesotans throughout the state. The resources that we get through the bonding bill are the most significant development resources that we get from the state. They're vital to preserve housing for the state's lowest income households and for building new permanent homes for people, including people who have experienced homelessness. Housing is the foundation for everything that we do, whether it's children in school, someone managing chronic health condition, or a formerly incarcerated person reentering society. Stably housing more Minnesotans helps ensure that our investments in other areas of the state budget go as far as possible. So thank you very much for your commitment for more homes in the DE amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Schnell.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Schnell, the Commissioner of the Department of Corrections, and I do want to say thank you to the Chair for recognizing the critical importance of the needs of the Department of Corrections as the budget indicates. The DOC has approximately $600 million in deferred maintenance, which is, I would just point out, is the equivalent of the department's annual budget. We are an agency with more than 4,200 full-time employees. Many of our facilities are more than 100 years old, which highlights, I believe, the needs that we have. Tonight, I just want to point out two of them that I think are most urgent. First of all is TOGO. Somebody recently asked me, what does TOGO stand for? Well, TOGO is an unincorporated community up in Itasca County that houses our Challenge Incarceration Program. And serves about 100 offenders at any given time. Nearly 70 years ago, inmates at the time hand dug a sewer system in Togo that is still operational today. That system has failed. It is not in compliance with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency requirements and needs to be repaired as soon as possible. In fact, that project is shovel-ready and literally has to be done. The facility itself, operation of the facility itself, is dependent upon that project being completed. Second of all, I would just point out some work that needs to be done at Minnesota Correctional Facility in St. Cloud. That facility is a 125-year-old facility that is surrounded, many of you are very familiar with it, by a large granite wall. That granite wall, which obviously is a critical safety and security feature, requires a tremendous amount of work. To repair the existing granite wall itself would cost more than $16 million. To avoid that, what is proposed is the installation of a second interior fence, which would circle the entire interior of the granite wall at a cost of $2.7 million. This would maintain the look of the facility, but it would allow us to, in a much more cost-effective manner, maintain the safety and security of that facility overall. And second, at St. Cloud, there is the requirement that we install a fire suppression system in three of our cell blocks at the facility. This fire suppression system is critical, life safety, for both the offenders who call that facility home, as well as our staff. While these are large, oftentimes stone or concrete buildings, the reality is there's much inside that is flammable. And being able to manage offenders in a safe manner for both our safe and for the people who reside there becomes essential. So again, I just wanted to highlight two of the more than $600 million in projects that are pending, but we thank you for consideration of the proposal and thank you for your work.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. The next is Scott Marquardt, followed by Mike Bertelson. Mr. Marquardt, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Scott Marquardt with Southwest Initiative Foundation. We serve a region encompassing 18 counties and two Native nations in southwest Minnesota, basically bordered by Ortonville, Laverne, Jackson, and Litchfield. Thanks for allowing me to come and talk with you about the fastest growing economic development issue in our region, child care. I'm going to limit my remarks because I know time is limited to the Greater Minnesota Child Care Facility Capital Grant Program starting on line 64.1. The growing child care crisis is a critical issue facing our region's employers as they work very hard to recruit and retain the talent they need to compete globally. I know you've heard the stats all several times. In our region, we have an estimated shortage of over 3,100 child care slots, and we know that's having a significant impact on our business's ability to decide where they want to invest and to expand, and making tough decisions for families as they decide where to live. We see a number of business plans and financial infractions come through our office for startups of childcare enterprises under a family license or a center license. These community collaborations and the visionary entrepreneurs face many financial obstacles as their plans unfold, and the funding as proposed in this bill will provide critical capital to help lessen the barriers related to planning and design, land acquisition, renovations, construction, and equipment. Not having to debt service for these expenses will be a critical part of sustainability planning and financial performance of the child care enterprises. In many cases, the debt service and upfront capital costs will stop these child care solutions and these projects dead in their tracks. These barriers require external investment and partnership so that the operations are sustainable, so that quality is not compromised, and so that it's affordable for all families. Another important fact, and something we're very grateful about, is that the funding as proposed covers both family license, child care, and center-based care, and startups and expansion projects. These distinctions are huge for communities throughout Greater Minnesota. A one-size-fits-all approach absolutely will not work for this issue, as it hasn't worked for others. We need to retain, expand, and develop new child care enterprises in a variety of organizational structures. The flexibility in this bill as is will help foster and catalyze the innovative models that are proving to be transformational in our rural communities, collaborations between schools and hospitals, employer-driven innovative models, engagement of the faith community, and other models that we haven't even dreamed of. More importantly, something we're very thankful about how it's worded, is the type of expenses. Not only does it address the high costs of facilities and construction, but it helps cover equipment and furnishings. That's a huge part of a startup budget and something we're very thankful about as is. It's hitting all sectors of the spectrum, all phases of business, and that's something very important. I just want to close and say thank you. This is a big deal for our families and our communities. 3 hours west of here in Madison, Minnesota, population 1,200, the self-proclaimed lutefisk capital of Minnesota. About 2 years ago, roughly 10% of the community came out, all walks of life, all ages, and we asked them, what's the most important thing for your community about the future? Overwhelmingly, childcare. And Valentine's Day of this year, Little Eagles Daycare opened in Lacaparral Valley Middle School, or excuse me, Elementary School, licensed for 50 children, a huge solution for this county. And what's most importantly is on the wall as you walked in were the list of 51 or 52 families, businesses, and residents that came together to contribute and invest in this project. If this funding is secured and it's deployed in Greater Minnesota, you'll be very proud of the leverage in the deployment. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bertelson.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Bertelson. I'm the Vice President for University Services at the University of Minnesota, and thank you for the chance to talk to you today. First and foremost, Madam Chair and members of the committee, let me say thank you, as others have, very much for your strong support of the University of Minnesota and the inclusion of $150 million in this bill for us. Our capital request is all about renewal of our aging facilities in Crookston, Duluth, Morris, and the Twin Cities campus. Our request is focused on renovating, restoring, and reimagining some of the oldest pieces of our 29 million square feet of space. It's about safety, energy efficiency, and accessibility, but really, at its core, our request is about transforming our facilities, some of them built in the 19th century, into the 21st century places of teaching, learning, and research for our students and faculty. And it's about preparing our state's workforce and up-to-date facilities. Thank you for the $28 million for the Institute of Child Development Project, which will allow our world's leading this program to support cutting-edge interdisciplinary research in human development and early education. Thank you for the $4.3 million for the A.B. Anderson Project in Duluth to convert woefully outdated classrooms built in 1970 into safe, accessible, and modern teaching and learning spaces that serve 5,000 students every day. Thank you for $117.7 million to support HEPR projects across this entire state of Minnesota. The university has more than 900 buildings valued at more than $12 billion in replacement value. More than 50% of these were built over 50 years ago. And to maintain this aging portfolio to address our nearly $4 billion backlog of needs, we need to be investing at a minimum $200 million each and every year. Your investment will go along an important way toward funding these critical needs and projects like capital renewal and mechanical engineering on the Twin Cities East Bank, food science and nutrition in St. Paul, and chemistry building in Duluth. To address, I understand Representative Dean's question from earlier this morning, capital renewal project like these bundle all of the code, accessibility, and mechanical system improvements within one building project at a time to restore them to a safe and reliable operations, bring these very outdated structures into a 21st century. Doing these together at one time instead of a long list of 15 or 20 different separate lines is much more economical and much less disruptive. And for mechanical engineering, you're right, you have seen it before. This is the last funded, and you won't see it again. Finally, thank you for updating bill language for the Glen Sheen Estate capital renewal, which would allow the university to advance this project in phases as we tackle urgent work as funding becomes available. Madam Chair and members, we're keenly aware that preparing this bill necessitates many difficult decisions for you, and there are many worthwhile projects across the state. We are thankful to be included. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mr. Martin. Followed by WLSSD. Mr. Martin, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for your time this afternoon. In the interest of time, I won't tell you a whole lot about our project. We've had a chance to visit with many of you individually, and we expect to be darkening the rest of your doors shortly. In 2014, the Chatfield Center for the Arts was in roughly the same position we are right now. We were included in the bill early in the session, went through all the negotiations and the fight. Our project stayed in the bill, but I think the Friday before adjournment, Logan O'Grady, who staffed the Senate committee, called and said, "We haven't got enough money. Can you phase your project?" Well, since we had a two-building project, it seemed like a natural breaking point. We agreed and received $5.3 million, which we used to rehabilitate a 1936 auditorium into a modern performance facility that has exceeded everybody's expectation as far as use, quality, and help to our community. From 2014 to 2019, we've been back every year for phase two to rehabilitate the 1916 building. That is a building directly adjacent to the auditorium. It also houses most of the mechanical, the air conditioning, and the heating system for both buildings. What's happened also in those 4 years is that construction inflation, especially in southeastern Minnesota, is really killing us. We've got every contractor in the world is busy, and they're charging like it. So that's something that we need to address, and we hope to get the funding as soon as we can, because we need the 1916 building. We can't sustain five-figure utility bills in the winter months. We need to fix the roof because it was built when coal was $20 a ton. It's not that way anymore. We also need to be able to rent more of the room in the facility. Right now, only one of 13 rooms is rentable. And we can't do that without an air conditioning system and a heating system that is more reliable. So what we're here asking for, and this is the last time you'll see me, if you do fund this project. In fact, last year one of your committee members asked me if we fund you this year, would you go away and leave us alone? And I promised, yes, we will. Thank you.
And Mr. Martin, I promised that the other night when we decided on this project, that it's the last time.
Last time we will be here. Much as I like seeing you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Ms. Barn.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Ann Bourne. I'm the executive director at the Western Lakes Pier Sanitary District. We're a regional wastewater treatment facility in northeastern Minnesota. We cover a 530-square-mile area. I think most of you are very familiar with the project. There is a handout in your folder. But basically, this is a project that really clicks a lot of boxes that sometimes are very difficult to balance. It's a green renewable energy project that also saves customers money, that also improves sustainability, and ultimately is better for the overall environment in northeastern Minnesota. It's very unusual to find a project that has a base as different as industrial customers saying we really want this project, and environmental groups also saying this is really an important green energy project. And basically the concept of the project is we are taking biogas that's produced when treating wastewater and converted into electricity for our own needs, and also, since it's a combined heat and power project, also hot water, vital hot water that we need for our energy balance in the wastewater treatment plant. We are so appreciative to have this project included in the DE amendment, and we would really urge this bonding bill to move forward and to the project to be included. Because one of the parts of balancing sustainability and environmental improvement and economics is also doing the right project at the right time, and this year is the right time. We have contractors on site that are completing other projects, very interested in bidding. We have bidding documents that will be going out in the next 2 weeks. We have generator sets that have already come back, very cost favorable. And this project can be done on budget and on time if we're able to move forward this year. So, again, we appreciate our inclusion in this bill and hope that we stay there as it moves forward. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Lepp.
Good evening, Chair Murphy, members of the committee. My name is Senta Leff. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless and co-chair of the Homes for All campaign. As many of you know, Homes for All is a coalition that has over 230 endorsing organizations now from every legislative district in the state. The coalition has continued to grow in recent years because Minnesota's housing crisis has continued to grow, unfortunately. This biennium, we set a goal of securing $200 million in housing infrastructure bonds and $100 million in general obligation bonds, because as affordable housing advocates, we know that the needs are a matter of life and death. They're great and they're growing. More than one quarter of all Minnesotans, so more than 572,000 households, pay more than they can afford for their housing. That number has grown by nearly 26,000 households since 2015. You may have heard the results of the Wilder Homeless Study, which came out over the past couple of weeks. Those numbers were alarming. Homelessness in Minnesota has increased by 10% since the last study in 2015. Unsheltered homelessness, perhaps even more alarmingly, has gone up 62% statewide, and unsheltered children have gone up 56% statewide. We absolutely need to do more to build and preserve affordable housing. Well, the previous testifier talked about timing is everything. Now is the time. This bill would put $120 million in housing infrastructure bonds toward permanent supportive affordable housing and $30 million towards the rehabilitation and preservation of publicly owned affordable housing statewide, and we're grateful for that. The Homes for All Coalition hopes to work with both chambers of the legislature to find a path forward to help meet Minnesota's affordable housing needs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I'm also testifying on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties that represents all 87 counties. I want to thank the Chair for this bill, in particular what it does in the transportation funding area. Although it's the smallest amount, critical need for us as well as the cities, townships, is the local road wetlands replacements program that receives $10 million of funding in this bill. As we previously testified before the committee, the program is 33 credits short of what is the annual need for 2019. If that was not funded, we face the very real possibility that some projects could not go forward. Particularly the central area of the state stretching from the western borders to the central border, so we very much appreciate that funding. The local bridge program, it also meets a critical need, in part because the funding for local bridges that is currently dedicated may be ending at the conclusion of this fiscal year, and consequently this bill would be the only source of funding for this. I also, before I talk about the program in general, want to acknowledge the Chair's wise decision to include a separate funding item for the St. Paul Bridge at $48 million. These mega big bridge projects have been a problem in the past by eating up the funding that's provided for dozens of individual bridges, and by separating that out, we're not facing that problem. The need for local bridge rehabilitation has been captured in another handout that's been given to the committee by MnDOT. There are over $343 million of local bridge projects that need funding, of $183 million of bonding. So the $100 million authorized in this bill will make a substantial cut of that towards that. $104 million of those projects are essentially ready to go. And consequently, we can get this money, we being the cities, counties, and townships, into your local economies quickly. Although the appropriation is characterized as going to local governments, in almost all instances, these are privately contracted projects. So these monies go to your private contractors throughout the state and their employees, providing a significant enhancement for your local economies. Finally, I want to acknowledge the money that's been provided for the local road improvement program. For the past 10 or more years, this has been a significant source of funding, a competitive grant program that's been administered for MnDOT that sends out money to select projects in cities, counties, townships. Highly appreciate this money. So thank you very much. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Pomeroy, Mr. Carlson, the chair wasn't so wise. I looked at all the people that turned their assignments in, and all but three recommended the Kellogg Bridge. Mr. Pomeroy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andy Pomeroy from Frederickson and Byron, representing the city of Moorhead this evening. Just want to talk to you a little bit about the urgency around the DNR flood hazard mitigation program for both the city of Moorhead and the communities all around the state. You've heard specifics about the Moorhead project, but I wanted to give an update on that. So this year, Moorhead experienced the eighth highest flood in the last 100 years. When large floods happen in the city, we find a drastic increase in the amount of residents looking to take advantage of the city's buyout programs. There are 42 properties along the Red River in the main part of the city that are have not taken advantage of that buyout yet. We have heard from many of those residents already looking for a buyout. They're once again, sick of having to deal with the flood waters. In addition to that, there's 26 properties in the North Moorhead annexation that are in a similar state. When the city doesn't have state resources available, we don't want to pass up the opportunity to acquire those properties and miss an opportunity to fill a gap in our levy system. So over the past decade or so, the city's actually relied on its own property taxes to acquire a number of properties to the tune of about $18 million of property tax money going into buyouts. We want to avoid that in the future and get the support from the state to be able to fill these gaps at a timely manner when residents are willing sellers and keeps those costs down. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Historical Society, Mr. Wentworth.
Thank you, Chair Murphy and members of the committee. My name is Kent Whitworth. It's my privilege to serve as the Director and CEO of the Minnesota Historical Society. On behalf of the Minnesota Historical Society, I simply want to add our voice to the chorus of thank yous to Chair Murphy and the members of the committee for the strong recommendation in the capital budget bill. We thank you and we're grateful for your support for the hard work that we do to bring our state's history to Minnesotans and to visitors from around the nation and the world. Having well-cared for facilities is vital to our work, and we particularly appreciate the support for asset preservation, taking care of the state's assets, particularly historic structures, is essential. And we very much appreciate the support for the next segment of the Historic Fort Snelling Revitalization Project. I want to especially thank Representative Erdahl for authoring the bill for the Fort Snelling Initiative. I assure you that this project has been thoroughly planned and designed by our talented staff, as well as the architects and engineers and construction professionals who are working on this effort. And it's been reviewed by the National Park Service and the State Historic Preservation Office. I know that you have heard some concerns expressed over archaeology and burial sites and other issues, and I can assure you that we are conscientiously following best practices adhering to all rules and laws to ensure that we thoroughly consider all sources of information to respectfully treat both known and potential burial sites in this important historic area. Again, I want to express our deepest thanks and gratitude from the Minnesota Historical Society. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Shalimsky?
Well said, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robert Chalimsky. I'm the Managing Director of the Playwright Center. First, I want to express my admiration to all of you. I recognize the tremendous amount of work and research that goes into constructing an omnibus bill such as you're considering, and that you had so many compelling projects to consider. I want to express our deep gratitude for the inclusion of $4 million for the Playwright Center in the bill. And when I say our gratitude, of course, I mean on behalf of our staff and board, but also I mean on behalf of the writers of the now 70 plays that we help make every year, which with your support will rise to over 100 plays we'll help to make every year. I want to express the gratitude of the now over 300 Twin Cities artists we employ every year to help make those plays, which will rise to over 500 every year with the support of the state. And I express that gratitude on behalf of the more than 2,000 playwrights around the country that we serve every year, 300 in the state of Minnesota. Some writers with names you know, like Lee Blessing, Martina Mayock, Kui Nguyen, Jeffrey Hatcher, and Suzanne Laurie Parks, and some who are just that person who for the first time has realized that they have a story to tell, that their story matters, and that the way they can best tell it is to write a play. We're excited to use this opportunity to continue to grow that support and to, in our 50th year of operation, open a robust arts center that will be a vital part of transforming the Creative Enterprise Zone into a burgeoning arts corridor right in the heart of the Twin Cities, right in the heart of our great state. You know, when you come into the Playwright Center, the first thing you see is a sign that says, "Theater begins here." With your support and with these bonding funds, we look forward to ensuring that throughout the country, people know that that means that theater begins here in Minnesota. Thank you so much for your support, and thank you for your inclusion of the Playwright Center in the bill.
Thank you. Colleen O'Connor Toberman.
Thank you, Chair Murphy and members of the committee. My name is Colleen O'Connor Toberman. I live in Minneapolis, and I'm here representing Friends of the Mississippi River in opposing bond funds for the Community Performing Arts Center, or CPAC, at Upper Harbor Terminal. For more than 20 years, my organization has been deeply engaged in planning for the future of the site, including sponsoring design charrettes as far back as 2004. We envision a UHC development that prioritizes what community members have shared they would like to see, a site with large green spaces, business opportunities for Northside entrepreneurs, and affordable housing. We envision both a design process and an outcome that build wealth for all residents, connect neighbors to each other and to the river, and empower residents to design their future. The proposed CPAC does not deliver on this vision. The concept plan is for a concert stadium privately operated by First Avenue within both regional and national park boundaries. Public bond funds will be used to design this concert venue that will yield private wealth for a select few business owners, not the larger community. The developer's plan hinges on an eventual total of $20 million in state funds for CPAC design and construction, so this year's request is just the tip of the iceberg. Other forthcoming UHT site components, such as affordable housing or green infrastructure, will likely also seek state bonds in future years. Given those future needs, is $20 million for a privately operated concert venue the right way to spend the state's resources for this site? Upper Harbor Terminal is a unique site with potential to serve as an incredible community asset. It deserves the very best in creative planning processes and development ideas. This concert stadium is too controversial and too privatized to deliver on that potential, and it does not deserve state bonds. I ask that you support a better vision for Upper Harbor Terminal by removing funding for First Avenue's concert venue from the bonding bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Author Seifert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
I wanted to thank you, Madam Chair, for including the Red Rock Water System project in the bonding bill. As you know from previous testimony, 20 to 30% of the wells tested in our region tested above acceptable levels for arsenic, nitrate, and other bacteriological characteristics. These are needs, not wants. The drinking water in southwestern Minnesota has traditionally had challenges. Red Rock Water is there to solve the problem, and we believe it's a problem that rises to the level of needing to be done now and not later. Your inclusion in this of our project in your bill is so much appreciated by the people in southwestern Minnesota who deserve clean drinking water just like people from other parts of the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Sims.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Lachella Sims, a 48-year resident of North Minneapolis. I'm also a senior organizer and advocate with MICA. I'm a member of the Blue Line Coalition, a member of the Community Advisory Committee to the Met Council, and a member of the Environmental Justice Advisory Group to the Minnesota Pollution Controls Environmental Justice Group. I'm also a founding member of the National Association of Black Military Women, the Minneapolis chapter, and a member of the Women Veterans Initiative Group. I myself am not a veteran, but these groups, when my son went into the military, I became so involved with these groups, fathered me into their groups, and I'm a strong supporter, continue to be a strong supporter. I'm originally from Charleston, West Virginia. My father was a coal miner there. I came to Minnesota by way of Syracuse, New York. The fellow that I married was attending the university there, and then one of the professors here at the university recruited him to come here to finish his master's degree in educational psychology. I came to the issue at hand is not really complicated in terms of North Minneapolis asking you to withdraw bonding for the Upper Harbor Terminal. We're just really asking for justice for all, that's stated in the Pledge of Allegiance, equality and equity. Through the years, North Minneapolis has historically and intentionally been social engineered by the city and other politicians' decisions and other policymakers. This has been done by way of various means, including racial prejudice, redlining, housing covenants, comprehensive plans, and other means. As a result, North Minneapolis is now landlocked. According to Google, North Minneapolis is approximately 57.9 square miles. We have 2 banks, 4 gas stations, 2 pharmacies, 1 switch is closing. A business corridor that is about 15 to 20 blocks long, and all these are within 1 square mile. And 1 grocery store. There may be another one recently. All of which means that residents of North Minneapolis has to go into surrounding suburban cities to spend our money to provide for our basic needs. We can't spend our hard-earned money in our neighborhood because growth and development and businesses just aren't there. In spending our money in other communities, this helps those communities to develop and grow and have all the goodies of life. But North Minneapolis does have a garbage burner, which other cities' garbage is brought into the city to burn, a gravel crusher, the city's car impound lot, and a six-lane Highway 55, Olson Highway, running right through our residential, one of our residential areas to help facilitate surrounding cities to get to downtown. Highway 94 has 6 to 8 lanes. And we now have a high-speed 40 miles per hour highway, six-lane highway going through our neighborhood. No other surrounding cities has this. It literally, the six lanes literally starts when you enter into Minneapolis from Golden Valley, that bridge there at Worth Park. The Upper Harbor Terminal is an opportunity at this time for Minneapolis to see growth and development and other goodies that other surrounding communities now have. The citizens are asking for this withdrawal to continue to make decisions of their own and collaborate with surrounding governments, institutions, et cetera, to help determine our own future livelihoods and for our children to come. It's really not asking for anything that other communities haven't been having and enjoying through the years. There is a sense of distrust with the city of Minneapolis and other entities because of the historical manner in which Minneapolis has been treated and now finds themselves in. So withdrawing this funding is merely a way of you all agreeing and supporting that North Minneapolis is very capable of decision makings and helping us determine our own future in times to come like everyone else. So as if cities and other governments are claiming equity, then they must do equity. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Ms. Chappelle.
For the record, my name is Stephanie Chappell. I live in Glencoe, Minnesota. I'm here to ask that you deny the Minnesota Historical Society's $12 million request. They are not ready. They need time, not money. They need time to adjust to new leadership and complete reports that are currently in progress with the National Park Service and the State Historical Preservation Office. They need time to wait and see what the Met Council will do with their new studies focusing on Fort Snelling. It's the Riverview Corridor, and that is their single and sole research project for the next 3 years, dealing with the environmental concerns in and around Fort Snelling. Currently, one of the proposed ideas is to run a corridor underneath the historic fort. They need time to provide balanced presentations that are also accurate. They need time to share Minnesota history without influence of Minnesota's private and public partnerships with transparency and respect to all. They need time to find a new revitalization plan that spends some money on the actual fort and not the plan like the one before us that continues to desecrate a known cemetery location dating to 1820 where Ojibwe, Iowa, pioneers, military officers, all rested side by side peacefully. And I wanted you to know that I have no horse in this race. I am a Minnesotan, born and bred and raised. and I am not being paid to do any of this, and I am under no influence from anyone but myself. I discovered this on a whim last year and decided to look into it more. In January, I discovered the cemetery situation and felt that was outrageous. On behalf of myself, Minnesotans, please, please deny this $12 million and give the Historical Society time, not money.
Thank you, Ms. Chappelle. Catherine Fleming.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee members. My name is Catherine Fleming, and I'm a member of a number of organizations. I am the District D Commissioner for MPAS. I'm part of the Green Zone Task Force. I'm an Environmental Justice Coordinator member. I'm a Blue Line Coalition CAC co-chair. I wear a lot of hats, but I'm here as a Northside resident. And I'm here to ask you to deny the bond request from the City of Minneapolis for the CPAC. The residents of North Minneapolis sees the Upper Harbor Terminal as a once-in-a-generation opportunity for economic development and the building of community wealth. This privately owned venue that the city is proposing does not do that. It does not bring any economic development to the community. It is a spur for gentrification and involuntary displacement of residents. When the city looks to build a live music venue, when we have residents who don't know where their next meal is coming from, we have to protest that. So I'm not here to enhance my political career like some of the political folks who have supported this particular opportunity that the city wants to give a privately owned organization. We want to make sure as residents that we're given the opportunity to have a say in what happens and to make sure that this once-in-a-generation opportunity is not lost on the residents of North Minneapolis. The city could have come to you for housing. It could have come to you to address the environmental overburden of the residents. What did they come to you with? We have a live music venue for you. So we are not going to sit back and take that from them at all. We want to make sure that our voice is heard. We want to make sure you deny this absolute fallacy of a funding request where they suppose that this is going to help the residents of North Minneapolis. It will not, and we oppose it. We have established what we call a co-creation team. We have 400 signatures from Northside residents. We have 40 environmental organizations that support us. I have letters from the National Park Service who are in opposition of this concept plan from the City of Minneapolis. We have other government agencies who support us. So we're asking that you deny this bond request. It is a predecessor to another $18 to $20 million that they're going to be looking for, this $48 million privately owned venue. Our baseline is to make sure that the community owns this. We want to make sure that community ownership is at the forefront and the bottom line of this project. This project, this property, this 48 acres, is owned by the City of Minneapolis. To me, that means it's publicly owned and it needs to stay that way. So in order to build a generational wealth in a community that has not had the financial or economic investment for decades, we want to make sure that this opportunity is not lost on our residents. So we are imploring you to deny this request, and we'll be back next year to make sure you deny the $18 million.
Thank you, Ms. Fleming. Lisa Ansarni. Could I just announce at this time that, just a reminder that when Ms. Nash took your application to get on the list. I'm sure she said, you have 2 minutes. Thank you.
Clock starting now. Good evening, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Lisa Engsarn. I'm a City Council member from the City of West St. Paul. About a month ago, I was here to talk to you about House File 1598, and I'm so thankful to see that this language and the delete all amendment in front of you today. To quickly reiterate, we have asked for 50% cost share of lift station and force main replacements. A significant portion of West St. Paul-owned utility infrastructure is between 60 and 100 years old and is in dire need of a replacement. Again, this is a need and not a want in our community, and we sincerely appreciate your inclusion of our request in the forthcoming Omnibus Capital Investment Bill. The City of West St. Paul and its citizens have spent $7.9 million in the last 10 years as part of the regional inflow and infiltration system and private lateral repairs. In the next 4 years, we must make additional improvements totaling $6.34 million in lift station and force main replacements. Our sewer rates are higher than any community to which we've run rate comparisons, and our taxpayers cannot afford increases in cost to respond to what the Met Council inflow and infiltration dictates for these lift station and force main replacements. As mentioned, this piece of infrastructure is part of a greater regional system. A healthy system in West St. Paul means a healthy system for other communities too. Thank you again for hearing us today, Madam Chair and Committee, and I can't thank you enough for including West St. Paul in this bill.
Very good.
30 seconds, I think, to spare. 30 more seconds. So. Any questions?
I can present the next one.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this evening. My name is Gary Kriesel. I'm a commissioner for Washington County. On behalf of the Washington County Board of Commissioners, I am here to thank you for including funding in House File 2529 for the Manning Avenue Highway 36 interchange. Words cannot express how thankful we are to see your support for this important project. We also just received a letter of support from Congresswoman Betty McCollum. Finding a solution to this dangerous intersection is a top priority of the Washington County Board. Currently, this is a high-speed intersection controlled by a stoplight. For the last 5 years, we have experienced about one crash a month, and because of the high-speed nature of Highway 36, these crashes can be severe. A few years ago, one of these crashes resulted in a fatality. John Larson, a resident of Scandia, Minnesota, a volunteer firefighter, a husband, and a father to three children, was driving eastbound on Highway 36, had a green arrow to go northbound on Manning Avenue when he was broadsided by a minivan and was killed. The truth is that any of the crashes we have at this intersection could be fatal. They are that bad. So improvements that we have planned at this intersection that will be funded by House File 2529 will change lives. The House File 2529 will allow us to leverage local and federal dollars to build a great separated interchange at this location, which a solution will ensure our federal funding doesn't expire, which it will do if we don't receive funding. It will also improve traffic flow and, most importantly, will dramatically improve safety and help ensure that we don't have more tragedies here. Thank you. This means a lot to Washington County and the East Metro. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Donahue.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And on behalf of the Alliance, I want to thank you very much for the level of funding in this bill for transportation, which really is a system of public assets with billions of dollars that touches all corners of the state. We want to thank you for all modes that are included in this bill, whether it's bus rapid transit lines, ports and waterways, railroad highway grade separations, the local road wetland replacement program, airports, and many other projects. They will greatly improve safety and will allow for more efficient freight movement. In particular, I'd like to thank you for the funding for the local road improvement program and the local bridge program. These programs provide really important funding for local governments, regardless of population, so small cities and townships, all local governments, to replace deficient bridges and address local road needs. Because even when there's additional funding into the Highway Trust Fund, 62% of that, by constitution, has to go to state highways. So local roads and bridges do need these additional programs to allow for progress. For decades, the legislature has included these programs in the capital bonding bill, recognizing this need. In the last two bills, there was $194.5 million for local roads and $79 million for local bridges. That funding has now all been programmed or spent, and there's now a waiting list of local bridges that weren't able to be funded in the last round. These programs also leverage federal and local funding. So for the local road programs on the map in your packets that you saw earlier, there's a request for a little over $100 million in bond proceeds. That would be matched with over $30 million in federal funds and over $152 million in local funds to get $317 million worth of projects done. So thank you again for the funding for transportation. Our system continues to age and deteriorate with a growing population and increasing freight traffic. Funding in the capital bonding bill allows the state and local governments to make progress and prevent the backlog of projects from overwhelming the system. So thank you for this level of funding to address many of our transportation needs.
Thank you. Mr. McGuire.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Jo McGuire, and I'm a current Ramsey County Commissioner. It's a pleasure to be before you, and I am excited to say that I am a former state legislator and so served in your capacity and know the hard work that you've been doing. So I really appreciate that and come before you on behalf of our entire board of commissioners at Ramsey County to thank you for all of your hard work in putting this bill together. We recognize that you did put together a balanced bill that really addressed the needs of throughout the state and recognized important preservation assets and important improvements in our state. Especially want to thank you for including our Battle Creek Winter Recreation Area that we know will bring economic development to our county. We're excited to get this project underway and have our local match ready to go. This will be an important investment in the East Metro and will attract numerous winter events, and it will benefit hundreds of high school students and thousands of residents in the region. It will enhance our opportunities for economic development and allow people to participate without having to travel long distances. We also want to thank you for all of your hard work in funding important statewide housing, transit, and transportation investments. We really need them in our county for all of our workforce investment and the quality of life for all of our residents. So I wish you well in your deliberations with the Senate. Good luck with the rest of the session, and please be in touch if we can be of any assistance to you. Thank you again for all of your work.
Thank you. Troy Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Troy Olson, and I represent the North Metro Mayors Association, which is a coalition of 15 cities acting as a unified voice to advocate for regionally significant issues in the North Metro. This bill contains numerous items of importance and benefit to the North Metro, but I want to point out five significant projects and thank you for their inclusion. In Champlin, $5 million for the Mississippi Park Project. Improved access to the Mississippi River will become a destination for people from all over the Metro. In Anoka, $10 million for the Trunk Highway 47 Railroad Grade Separation Project in Anoka. This project will improve flow and commerce and reduce travel time in the North Metro. In Maple Grove, $18 million to upgrade local connections. While Highway 610 now connects to I-94 in Maple Grove, it's important to remember that the project is not yet complete and that the local connections need to be improved to maximize the efficiency of both I-94 and 610. And $6.5 million for the Maple Grove Training Facility. This is a regional asset that contracts with at least 19 agencies in the metro area. And $1.5 million in Coon Rapids for planning money for the East River Road and Highway 610 interchange, another part of 610 that is not yet complete. So thank you very much. Appreciate these items being in the bill.
Department of Administration, Mr. Wazlowski? No.
No. Unfortunately, you get me. Good evening, Madam Chair. Committee members, I'm Alice Roberts-Davis. I'm the commissioner for the Department of Administration. Thank you for the opportunity to comment this evening. First, I want to echo all of the positive aspects of the bill shared by my fellow agency commissioners earlier. In addition, I'd like to thank you for fully funding the Capital Asset Preservation and Replacement Account at $10 million. This is an essential fund to make emergency repairs and mitigate hazardous materials in state agency buildings. Demand for these emergency repairs have grown due to the increasing age of state facilities and limited funding for preventative maintenance. Examples of past CAPRA uses include asbestos abatement, emergency roof, pipe, and structural repairs, fire and water damage repairs, and replacement of failed air conditioning, boiler, and water heater units. However, there is one provision that we are concerned about, and that's the Capital Campus Building Long-Term Plan. We have the opportunity now to consider the appropriate location and sizing of state facilities as the state undergoes a generational change in the residents we serve and the state employees who provide those services. Minnesota Statute 16B.24 mandates that the Commissioner of Administration conduct a strategic plan for the location of state agencies that considers design and transportation opportunities as well as the cost-benefit analysis of state ownership versus leasing. The governor has recommended $1.2 million to do such a comprehensive strategic plan, which has not been done since 1993. Unfortunately, this legislation does not fund that request and does not offer a viable alternative to what is required in 16B.24. The provision in House File 2529 only considers a subset of the mandated study by concentrating only on the Capitol complex and does not meet what requirements are held in that statute. Admin is required to consider all state agency space needs for employees on and off the Capitol complex. Imagine how much has changed since 1993 on the Capitol complex, and then consider the transportation options now available and what will be in the future. Governor Walz has provided in his budget recommendations a strategic plan proposal that will allow us to take those components into consideration. There are two additional items. First, House File 2529 assigns responsibility for overseeing the study and the buildings on the Capitol complex to the Capitol Preservation Commission, which is intended to solely oversee the preservation of the Capitol building. This work is wholly outside of their purview. Second, the legislation has a moratorium on renovation spending, which will impede ongoing maintenance and facility improvements. This will hinder state government operations, cause unnecessary deterioration to buildings, and limit admin's ability to complete its mission of providing safe and environmentally sound buildings on the Capitol complex. Finally, properly funding a strategic plan will also help inform the final disposition of the Ford building. This legislation prohibits the consideration of all viable options for very valuable and important real estate on the confined Capitol complex. The building was closed in 2004 due to its deterioration, need for major repairs, and the high cost of operating the space. The Ford building is in need of major mechanical, electrical, plumbing, interior and exterior repairs in order to return it to a viable use for office space. I look forward to working with the committee on a sound strategic plan for state government as well as the best possible solution for the Ford building site. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. And Finn?
Madam Chair and members, good evening. My name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. We are a statewide association representing 833 of Minnesota's 853 cities, and we're here in support of House File 2529 as amended. I want to point out three provisions that we specifically support. One is that the League appreciates the inclusion of housing infrastructure bonds and also GO bonds to help address affordable housing issues. Secondly, we support the Public Facilities Authority provisions and support having the funds go through the PFA. And last, the League supports the robust funds provided for the local bridge replacement program and the local road improvement program. We do have one ask, and that is for some language within the local road improvement program provision that would allow a portion of it to be used to assist local road authorities with cost participation in trunk highway projects. And that was a bill that was heard in Representative Hornstein's committee. And I'm hoping it's an oversight that it's not in your bill, but I'll try and get that language to you in the next day. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Good idea. Maybe before 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, huh?
Good reminder.
Stephen Hooser.
Chair Murphy, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Huser and I represent Metro Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on House File 2529, and thank you, Chair Murphy and the committee, for the work that has gone into this bill so far. Metro Cities would like to thank the committee for the inclusion of $8 million for inflow and infiltration mitigation for metropolitan cities. Metro Cities supports the inclusion of funding for the Local Road Fund and Local Bridge Fund and would encourage the committee to consider the addition of local cost share funding within the Local Road Fund. Metro Cities appreciates the inclusion of $128 million in housing infrastructure bonds, as well as the $30 million in general obligation bonds to help address affordable housing issues in cities across the metro. Thank you for your consideration.
Mr. Hauser, who are the Metro Cities?
Metro Cities represents 89 cities in the seven-county metropolitan area.
Minneapolis?
It includes Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Yeah, name them out. Thank you. Mr. Davis?
Good evening, Wesley Davis. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. If I'm red, it's because I get this way when I'm being mugged by the city of Minneapolis, who thinks they can perpetrate this theft of our public land to give to their cronies for special interests. And one of them is the First Avenue Productions, and what they want to do is build a music venue on the river in my neighborhood, the McKinley neighborhood, where I work and live. Let me tell you what you get when you get a music venue. You get alcohol use, noise, excessive trash, intense traffic and air pollution, crime, and all these are facts. It's not fantasy. It could be proven by the police department, who has to deal with music venues in the city of Minneapolis. You get seasonal part-time jobs. You get public urinating, which is a constant problem with these type of facilities. And you get drunks after the venue cruising your neighborhood looking for prostitutes. It's evidence, it's facts, it's supported by the police department. You want a bunch of drunks leaving a music venue, cruising your neighborhood, looking for prostitutes? If you approve this bond for $2 million for them to move forward, that's what you'll be doing. You'll be enabling these people who have conspired for a couple of years to steal the public land in order to give it to their cronies. The United Properties, which is the Polad family, First Avenue Productions, which is the Frank family, Thor Construction, and a few other people. So please deny this bond. It's Subdivision 21 on page 48. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Commissioner Meyer?
Good evening, Madam Chair.
Good evening.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 2529, the bonding bill in the House this year.
The DNR sincerely appreciates the strong support of our capital asset management program through bonding. We believe this is a reflection of our ability to invest in and create jobs and partnerships throughout the whole state of Minnesota. As we've testified, we rely on a bonding program that includes funding for several aspects of capital asset management in order to take care of our $3 billion in non-land capital assets. We just want to emphasize that while the Natural Resource Asset Preservation Program is our top priority, funding in each of our major functional categories is needed to ensure balanced management of the DNR capital assets on which Minnesotans depend for healthy, safe, health, safety, natural resource conservation, and recreation. Madam Chair, as we were preparing our testimony and I was thinking about the two-minute time limit, I thought if I could just say that we want to give you a big hug for what you've done for the DNR and the bill, that would cover all of our feelings. So thank you very much for yourself and the committee's work on this bill.
Ah, shucks. Mr. Boltz? Vice Chancellor, Minnesota State, welcome.
Madam Chair, I don't know how you follow that, Chair Murphy and committee. I am Brian Yulitz, and I serve the Minnesota State College University as Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. Thank you for the opportunity to briefly address House File 2529 before the committee tonight. On behalf of our college university students, the faculty and staff, our board of trustees, Chancellor Malhotra, I thank you for your time and careful attention and listening to and taking strong action in support of the urgent needs for asset preservation, capital investment in our campus facilities. Funding offered in the bill builds upon a trend of renewed commitment to stewardship started last session and will set in motion much-needed repairs and upgrades to existing buildings on over 40 college university campuses in every corner of the state, from Winona through the Twin Cities to Virginia on the Iron Range, to over to Thief River Falls, to East Grand Forks, and down to Pipestone and Jackson in the southwest corner of the state. Projects funded in this program would go directly to keeping our campuses warm, safe, and dry, and running more efficiently. Nearly 50% would go toward repairing campus building roofs, exteriors, doors, and windows. $60 million would fund needed repairs for replacement of HVAC, electrical, and utility systems that have reached the end of their useful lives and no longer are efficient or effective in their use. The balance would be dedicated towards interior upgrades to remedy accessibility and compliance issues, with a small portion going towards design of future work. While we recognize there's more work ahead, there's just 40 days left in the session, we urge your full support of the bill and look forward to working with you, your colleagues in the Senate and the executive branch in the coming days to bring this to reality. Again, we thank you so much for the support of our work and the work in your time and attention on this bill this evening. I can stand for any questions if you have any. Again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Yulitz. Did I promise you?
You did this morning.
Oh. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last time, the top of the heaper list was the Faribault campus, the South Central. For their roof, did that get taken care of? Because I see it's not in there now.
Madam Chair, Representative, no, it hasn't been taken care of. Our backlog of maintenance in the Minnesota State system is nearly $1 billion. It's $993 million. $150 million worth of requirements reflects about one of every six needs within our system. That is not on our list at this time, and we're hopeful for strong funding this session. We'd be able to address it next time.
Given Chair Murphy, I'm not going to abuse your generosity. We'll talk later.
Thank you, Mr. Yulitz. Stephanie Pinkola?
That's close. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Stephanie Pinkola, and I am with the Nature Conservancy. And we just want to thank you for including the DNR Forest for the Future program in this bonding bill. Earlier this session, you heard from some of our freshwater experts at the Conservancy about threats to water quality in the Mississippi Headwaters Basin, which provides drinking water for over 1 million Minnesotans. Bonding-eligible conservation programs like the Forest for the Future program are an important tool to keep sustainable, healthy working forests intact, to help filter and keep our water clean and provide recreation opportunities and timber for harvest. We thank Representative Hansen, and please convey our thanks to him for his work to carry the Forest for the Future bill. And thank you, Chair Murphy and committee members, for taking the time to learn about critical bonding investments that can be made in conservation and for your support. This is a great first step. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Hochstein?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Claudia Hochstein. I'm legislative liaison at the Minnesota Zoo. I'm here on behalf of Zoo Director John Frawley, who sends his apologies that he can't be here himself. I do have a letter from Mr. Frawley that I could distribute. I appreciate the opportunity, though, thank you so much, to testify tonight on HF 2529, and I thank you all for your hard work to put together a comprehensive bill. Thank you also for the strong support shown to the Minnesota Zoo by including the governor's full $25 million bonding request in your bill. The signature project of the $21 million Revitalize the Zoo project is the Minnesota Treetop Trail, repurposing the obsolete monorail track to create a 1.3-mile loop at the zoo's canopy level and provide guests with new views of our animals and new ways to connect with nature. Director Frawley isn't here tonight because he's doing his work as the Minnesota Zoo President, Zoo Foundation President, to raise private funds that will match a state investment in this project. In addition to the Treetop Trail, we're thankful for the inclusion of other projects encompassed by the Revitalize the Zoo project: Creatures Beneath the Canopy, Transport and Accessibility Phase 1, and the Animal Hospital renovation. Finally, thank you for including $4 million of asset preservation funds. Asset preservation funding is necessary for our 485-acre campus, which includes many electrical, mechanical, and plumbing systems. Keeping up with asset preservation is critical to the safety of our animals, staff, and 1.3 million annual guests. I'm grateful for your recognition that the 40-year-old Minnesota Zoo is an important asset for our state and worthy of continued investment. These funds will help us revitalize, naturalize, and mobilize the Minnesota Zoo to prepare it for the next 40 years and beyond. And I hope that you will continue moving a bonding bill forward this year and include these projects. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Dan Larson?
Madam Chair, members, Dan Larson, Minnesota Rural Counties. We're a membership organization representing 30 counties in greater Minnesota. We're here today to express grateful appreciation for inclusion of the local road wetland replacement program. This was a late ask, and it's in the bill, and I wanted to be here to express appreciation for that. This is a program, members, that really shouldn't be in this committee. It ought to be in the base of the Board and Water and Soil Resources. I'm going to make a commitment to this committee that I'll work over the summer to work with the agency and build out as much support as we need to help get that done. But every year, we struggle to find money for this program, which is a state responsibility, and so. We appreciate it. We also very much appreciate the money for local bridge replacement, local road improvement program, and Greater Minnesota Child Care Facility capital grant program. So thank you very much. Much appreciated.
You're welcome. Erica Skanger Santos.
Thank you for having me. My name is Erica Schlager-Santos. I'm a North community resident. I also work in the entertainment industry for 30 years as a stage technician, loading in and out semi-trucks full of sound systems. A venue of 10,000, picture if you will, dig if you will, a picture of 10,000 people seated by the river, and a park space also, with erosion control and soil remediation and a healthy, affirmative North community place. There's a disconnect here, and the notion that robust community engagement, which is the language in the Upper Harbor Terminal request for funding, is vague.
And it's an indication that the request is for a 10,000-seat, 7 to 10,000-seat venue is problematic. I'm part of the co-creation team. I've also raised my family in North Minneapolis. And while it is the way that I've paid the bills for my family by working in the industry, I would like you to dig, if you will, a picture of 10 to 15 semi-trucks idling their engines by the river while they unload the gear for shows of this size. This venue is a niche venue. It's a 10,000-seat venue in the midst of a market. And the notion that 40 acres is going to go to the park board is vital and important. But more important is a community health assessment tool that has been created here in the state of Minnesota and piloted in Duluth. And that community health assessment tool was presented at this conference on green education and expo, an impact on community at the River Center in St. Paul today. The six components of this are context and connectivity, nearby community institutions, which were mentioned earlier by Ms. Lachelle, economic stability, environmental resilience, health and safety, and above all, community engagement. I ask that you reject the $2 million request for the Upper Harbor Terminal until they come back amended with a product and a proposal that actually engages the members and residents of the North community and gives us direct access to the river. A 10,000-seat venue is a barrier to the river. We've also heard many things today about affordable housing, and it's just a whisper. It's just a whisper at this point when the funding is being requested to keep a 10,000-seat venue going. It's a massive, loud undertaking. And I appreciate you taking the time to hear me. I've not done this before, but I beg you to ask for an amendment and alternative plans. There are many alternative plans that this public land could be used for, and many members of the community, as you've heard earlier from some of the colleagues on the co-visioning team, that serve the residents of North Minneapolis economically, from a health and healing standpoint, and in a way that is respectful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pierre Willett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pierre Willett with Goff Public here on behalf of the City of Rogers. The officials from Rogers couldn't be here tonight as it is their council meeting night, but they wanted to express their gratitude and thank you for the funding for the Rogers Pedestrian Bridge, and thank you for responding to their urgent need to have a safe freeway crossing, and thank you for helping them to keep their young people out of the storm tunnel that they are currently using to cross under the freeway. And finally, thank you for helping to reconnect their community.
Thank you. Mayor?
Madam Chair, I stand to give this committee a huge hug for including the City of Apple Valley and its transit bridge in House File 2529. I am Mary Heyman Rowland, the mayor of Apple Valley, in its 50th anniversary of Apple Valley. I have spent 20 years as the mayor in that amount of time and watched this community grow in great ways. We want to thank you so much for taking the time to do the research, to know how important the Sky Bridge is for the City of Apple Valley. 50,000 cars drive on Cedar Avenue at this location every day. In the next decade, that will increase by 63%. 250,000 people utilize the Red Line today. This Sky Bridge is essential for the safety of children, families, and people who are making this crossing of 9 lanes. And you asked before, how is there 9 lanes? It's because there is a dedicated bus lane. So thank you so much for understanding how important safety is in the state of Minnesota, in Apple Valley, and I very much appreciate you including us in House File 2529. Thank you very much, and a big hug.
Thank you. Mary Hartnett.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm here representing Superintendent Terry Wilding. We were not able to find a sign language interpreter for him, and so he asked me to speak on his behalf and to say how much he appreciates, and the whole community appreciates, your investment in the state academies for the deaf and the state academies for the blind. This is the only option available for rural and people statewide or people from the metro area who want to have an immersion experience for kids who are visual learners. And the safety corridor investment, they've come repeatedly and asked for that. This is the first time that that has been made. It's an open campus, and it needs to be made safer, and now it will be made safer. And the asset preservation, a lot of those buildings are so old and need to be upgraded and need to be made accessible for the kids with multiple disabilities. So from the School for the Deaf, I love you. We love you, and we can't thank you enough for this wonderful investment. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on his behalf, and thanks to all the members of the committee for your support. Thank you.
Please tell Superintendent that he sold the program himself when he appeared last week.
Wonderful. Thank you. Definitely will.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify? Anyone else? Last call. And members of the committee, we're going to find a room. We're going to talk about some of the testimony that was given tonight. If you wish to participate, please join me. Ms. Nash is going to find the room and tell you what room it is by technology, or if you wait long enough, she'll have an answer right here. We have to find a little money, and we have to change a little language. Thank you. Thank you all for participating. This meeting is adjourned.